You're listening to the Top Woman Business Unusual Podcast. Now, the Top Woman Business Unusual Podcast. Learn from the greatest minds in business today. Interviews hosted by Ralph Fletcher. Learn how to improve business, get tips from industry leaders, and be motivated by real life experience. Top Woman, Business Unusual.
So, welcome to Topco's Business Unusual podcast. And today I'm joined by Andrea Bomart, who, that's the English version, not the German version. She's the co-managing partner at Knife Capital in Cape Town. So, Andrea, I've actually been looking forward to this for a very long time. I know we spoke on the phone earlier this year in the midst of this chaos, and I saw you present at a Deloitte's function in Cape Town around how to get finance, grow networks, and certainly get money. So I'm looking really forward to this podcast, but I mean, how are you doing?
Well, first of all, good morning, Ralph. Thank you very much for having me. Well, how am I doing? I'm doing well. I mean, it's interesting times, but I'm doing well. I can't complain. I think my life is relatively easy in comparison to many other people, so I'm good. I'm really good.
I was saying you look good. You've obviously, looking good and vibrant, but I doubt it's all been good underneath that. It's been disruptive for everybody. What have you found the hardest part of COVID for you? What have you found as the hardest thing to cope with?
On a personal level, there's two things. So by nature, I'm a control freak. It's not something I'm very proud of, but that's who I am. I'm a control freak.
Is it a German thing?
Well, maybe it is. COVID has taken away the control. I'm out of control. I cannot control what our president tells us to do in terms of what we can and can't do. I cannot control the virus. I cannot control how long it takes. I cannot. So for someone who's a control freak, who can deal with as long as I'm in control, to not be in control is something very, very unusual. And it took getting used to and took letting go. So I personally struggled a bit with that. Second of all, I have definitely learned that I am a people person. So given that during COVID, a lot of very intense and tough discussions had to be had, for me to do this on the phone or via Zoom was difficult. So I really kind of at some stage got to the point where I just craved to go and have certain conversations face to face. I just wanted to go and meet with the people. So I think these are my two big learnings about myself, to be honest. That was my way of what has COVID taught me.
So I get you about the control thing, and I almost feel that a little bit like most successful people in some way have to have some measure of control, because it's the things they can control that they can improve, right? So, I mean, how have you handled that? How have you handled that having to let go of control? has it been invigorating for you, or has it been like, okay, and then I've got to get other things? So for me, I've got to get control of my routine. that was a really big thing for me at the beginning.
Yeah, so I think I had to, on the one hand, just accept it. I had to kind of go and try to kind of go and make the best out of it and try to control that I can't control it. So therefore, what can I do? How can I kind of go and deal with it? So I just had to accept that I cannot go and really plan into the future and know when I can I go and fly again. There's certain things I just cannot kind of go and figure out. So therefore, as part of that, I just had to kind of go and accept it and say, okay, fine, nothing I can do about this. What can I do something about and focus on those things?
So the things that are left within your control. So, I mean, you guys at Knife Capital have got some really interesting investments that you've made. And for me, you know, we were talking earlier, you were saying all the plans that you had sort of got ripped up, as with everybody. So, I mean, did that teach you a valuable lesson for the future in terms of planning anyway for future organizations? Did you learn anything from that?
You know, it is interesting. So, for example, we are an investor in Cricket, which is a ticketing, events management ticketing platform, who was doing extremely well, growing like crazy. And within 2 weeks, their revenue went down to close to zero because events were stopped. Now, what have we learned about this? I mean, I think the learning cannot be that now in every business plan, there needs to be a COVID scenario. The world is going to go and come to an end. I mean, we actually joked and kind of said, well, if in our strategy session in February, somebody would have kind of come up with a scenario that says there will not be any events, we would have laughed this off and kind of said, let's not waste our time. This is never, ever going to happen. So let's just move on to something that is more kind of real. So I don't think we can move forward now to go and say, let's plan for those extreme cases. But what it has shown me is that this whole thing about you have to be agile or you need to be able to adapt quickly, this is for me the big learning. So I think I think we all need to understand and embrace that sometimes things happen that are out of our control. And can you as an organization, can you as a management team, can you kind of go and deal with it? Can you kind of go and handle to make changes quickly? Or do you become paralyzed? Are you like, but sorry, this is the way that we planned it, and now if this is not happening, the world is coming to an end. No. We need to go and get on it. I must say, I'm so proud of the entrepreneurs, not just in our portfolio, but in general that I've seen. And how after, let's say, 2 weeks of depression and whatever, they all, to some extent, came out and kind of said, okay, fine, let's stop feeling sorry for ourselves. Let's do something. And I think that is actually, for me, the big lesson. I think that is what maybe smaller companies are more capable of doing. And this is really what it shows me. But it is this ability that we need to have, to be able to react quickly.
For sure. I mean, we also, they're above us, by the way, in our building. So so we had the same thing. We were doing events and publications and suddenly we couldn't do anything. And so we had to adapt. And I wonder, does that change now that your criteria for when you're looking for entrepreneurs and their teams? Or is it the leader or is it the team? Because you mentioned both. You said an entrepreneur and his team. Is it both that need to have that adaptability quotient? And how do you measure that? I mean,
tell me. The leader chooses his team or her team. So the first thing, of course, is you need to kind of go and look at the individual / the individuals. And you will see, and you can make a lot of judgment calls about them by seeing who they've surrounded themselves with. And you will normally find that somebody who is like quite, let's say, open to risk and so on is most likely not going to go and surround himself with very, very conservative kind of people. So it normally does kind of go and shine. But I think one of the biggest challenges that we have, I think, in South Africa is that we have some amazing entrepreneurs who are great leaders as such, but to get this next middle management layer, because this is, of course, where you don't have the ownership anymore, so now it comes a little bit back to the salaries that you pay and so on. That, of course, is where competing against the corporates becomes a bit of a problem. So the point is to go and get that one right, because they are the ones who have to execute. So it is, at the end, it is about both. It is about the leader and the team that he or she has managed to kind of go and surround themselves with. How do you assess this? How do you look at this? I mean, when we kind of go and speak to companies, we like to kind of go and challenge them and see how they react when you challenge them. I mean, do they just accept the challenge? Do they fight back? Do they become aggressive? Do they become defensive? Do they, you know, it's small little things like this. I mean, how do you kind of go and how does somebody deal with being challenged with like a crazy assumption and how wide can they think? but damn, give me the solution to how to kind of go and test for this, and I'll absolutely embrace it. I don't know. It's gut feeling. To be honest, a lot of it is just having spoken to so many people, it's gut feeling. And of course, we sometimes get it wrong.
But it is important to check those things out, right?
And 100%. Absolutely.
And challenge people. And I suppose, you know, that team part, I mean, what are you seeing organizations? Because there's lots of organizations that are now looking for the future. So the organizations that you've worked with and successfully worked with, how are you seeing they getting good people on board? You must be finding some sort of ways that people are attracting the right talent, because it is mainly a salary thing. I get the sense it's not.
No, it's not. So it's a very interesting thing. I think also something that COVID has done now is you find those people who could not cope with the risk. So you find those who not, everything is about security. So they don't care actually about salary. They don't care about, they just want to have a secure job. So they couldn't cope with, am I going to go, what's going to happen? They really just don't. And then you found those who've now learned that they can cope with so many things and actually are now far more into job satisfaction and who they work with and to some extent being allowed the flexibility maybe to have a hybrid work structure, work from home, work and so on. So I think it has, people have become more defined, I think, because I mean, I think we've all had to cope with an experience that has taught us something about ourselves, and people are now a bit more clear about what they want. And I think as an organization, you need to decide what kind of individuals do you want. Do you want to attract the ones that really love security? But then you need to also decide, can I give this to them? Or are you now looking at those who can tell you the story of how they're adapted, how they're kind of going to do things? And then, yeah, you learn something more. No, salaries, there's of course, there is the affordability level. There is the one, I need X to survive or to do what I need. But then so many other things become more important. And I think COVID has made us more aware of it.
I mean, I know that your mandate is a growth organization. You're looking at helping organizations grow and with an emphasis on internationally. And I think that most South Africans, because of the way that RAND has sort of fluctuated in the political situation, you know, we said we might go into this. But I mean, there's a definite, you know, people are either leaving the country to seek employment anywhere else, or they have aspirations of taking their business somewhere else because of greater markets, certainty, those sorts of things. But then you have organizations, some of the big multinationals who've acquired businesses internationally, and a lot of them have also failed when they've gone international because they don't understand those markets. What advice do you have for entrepreneurs who maybe have been phoning you up and looking for financing, but maybe, you know, have bootstrapped their business up until now and are looking for growth? What are the things that you advise them to do? I mean, I did a podcast with the guys from Get Smarter, and they spoke to me about, they met someone internationally who suggested they read Scaling Up, and they took on the Scaling Up methodology. Is it something like that? Do you believe that organizations need to embrace some sort of methodology? And is there something that you, one methodology you prefer when you're working with customers?
So I think the first thing that as an entrepreneur you need to go and do is you need to be very, very honest with yourself and say, what kind of business do I want? Do I want a successful lifestyle business where I am still calling the shots, I earn a good salary, but if I want to go and go on 2 months leave, I can then do this, I don't have to go and report to anybody.
Sounds nice.
Exactly. I mean, I have one entrepreneur that I previously funded and subsequently exited, and he from now on says, I never ever want to take investors on anymore. I want to have a super successful lifestyle business. I don't want this stress of reporting to invest anymore. Not because of we were the bad ones, but I'm just saying. But he has made a very conscious choice to say, I know that I could grow faster and I could do certain things if I would take external money, but I choose not to. I choose not to kind of go and do this. I want to be master of my own destiny. Just that. So it's a decision. Then there are others who kind of go and say, I want to grow. I want to go and go international. I want to dominate the world. I want to be a market leader. Again, understand why you want this. Do you want it because of money? Because of power? Because of you want to be famous? What is really, really driving you? And I think you need to kind of go and understand this and be very honest. Forget about what you tell potential investors, but first of all, for yourself. Really what is it that you really, really want? Now, taking on external investors means you give up a certain amount of control. They have influence. They can veto things. They can kind of go and do things. And you need to kind of go and understand that it needs to be worth it. I mean, to kind of go and make this kind of change, you need to A, make sure that you are really aligned. Shareholders and shareholder alignment is absolutely key. If they want something else than what you want, it's going to be terrible. So you need to kind of go and then, so then if you then decide you're going to go and you want to scale, you want to kind of go and do this. The school fees that you have to kind of go and pay because you go outside of your comfort zone into something new. Whether it's a new market segment, a new vertical, a new geography, dealing with new people, having to kind of go and manage remote teams. How comfortable are you with becoming uncomfortable? How can you kind of deal with it? Who do you surround yourself with that can actually help you, can guide you? How much of it are you going to go and listen? Because not every guidance is the right one. So for us, what is quite important is first of all, that people do their homework. We find that so many people go and they have seen that XYZ was, company X has just gone into the US and they have employed 5 salespeople there. So because company X has done that, we are going to go and do this. But are they in the same segment? Is it successful? I mean, come on, nobody talks about, and it's not, so I mean, just because they have done it doesn't mean that it's working. It's the first thing. Second of all, can you compare yourself really? Is it the same thing? And I think the one thing that also irritates me is that entrepreneurs don't take enough time to plan, to really think about it, do research and make informed decision versus just making decisions. I mean, everybody talks about the agility and the speed to market that entrepreneurs have. And absolutely, this is a key advantage. But that doesn't mean that you should just kind of go and not plan, not think, not do your homework, not really kind of go and think about what are the implications. If I now go and move my head office to somewhere else, if I employ now 5 people in a different geography, what does it mean? Structure, reporting, payments, labor law, whatever. I find that doing your homework is what you really need to kind of go and do. And hopefully that is the one thing that investors bring, that they kind of go and force you to ask yourself the hard question. Have you thought of this? Have you prepared for this? Are you sure that this is what you want to kind of go and do? So I haven't seen the one book that kind of go and tells me this is the secret book now that it has the formula. And if you find one, please send it to me. So I find it is different every time. But the one advice I can really kind of go and give to people is please go and do your homework. Take some time thinking and not just do it yourself. Let yourself be challenged. Please kind of go and present this to somebody who's not just saying, sure, but somebody who will kind of look at it and say, I don't believe you, or why are you saying this? And I think that is, for me, the first big step towards scaling.
Is that honesty with yourself, that time to plan. And so, you mean, you mentioned a couple of things. You mentioned the scenarios. What I find a lot is there are some really good books about scaling and what to do. But too often, the more I read, the more I see there's contradictory sort of assumptions with these questions. And you can go yourself mad reading too much as well, I find. So, I mean, you know, you talk around informing and getting people around you. And I wrote the word down trust because it's not necessarily how clever they are, but how much you can trust them. And trust isn't somebody who tells you yes all the time. Trust is about somebody who's going to maybe be honest with you, with that feedback. It doesn't mean they're right, but they're going to be honest.
For me, trust is the key ingredient, is the ultimate. I mean, you can romanticize it, but when we invest in someone, you know what, this is going to be a journey for the next 5, 6, 7 years. And I can absolutely guarantee you that not everything is going to go well during those years. Now, there's a few things. Bad news travels as fast as good news. When things go bad, I mean, everybody is a good partner when things are going well. But, and it works both ways. How are you going to go and deal with the bad times? And, like, for me, one of the key highlights of any journey with one of our portfolio companies is when I get this phone call. I remember the one entrepreneur, I was always the one, we had our regular meetings and so on, and all of a sudden he called me and said, Andreas, where are you? I said, I'm in Johannesburg. Can you please, when are you flying back to Cape Town, can you please come and see me? It's like, hmm? And he said, well, what time are you landing? I said, 6 o'clock. Can you please come and see me? Yeah. Then the plane was delayed, so I arrived at 6:20 and I already have this message. Where are you? There was something. So I arrived at 7 o'clock in the evening, arrived in the office, and he looked at me and he said, we are running out of money. My finance person has just kind of come and we made a mistake in certain kind of formulas, and there was one assumption that we made, and one client has just kind of told us that they're closing doors, so they're not going to pay us, and we are now going to run out of money in 3 months. The nice thing for me was he got the message at 3 o'clock and he called me at 3:10. And he afterwards said to me that for him, the best thing was that I responded with, okay, how can we fix this? It is about trust. It is about trust to give the bad news and that the person, I have to trust that entrepreneurs don't give me just the good news, the marketing pitch. I get that that's when they pitch for the investment. But once we are in it together, I need to know both sides. And I need to trust that I will get the real, honest information. And I get it in time. Entrepreneurs need to trust that as investors, we are also there in the bad days. And we don't start finger pointing. And we kind of go and say, how can we fix this together? So to be honest, it is actually all about trust. And trust can only be earned. Trust. You need to do it. You need to walk the talk. You need to really kind of go and do it. You can't just say, please trust me. You need to earn it both ways.
I mean, we spoke about COVID and having these phone calls and Zoom calls and you wanting to get out and see people face to face. Was that part of it, not just your personality, but your gut that you needed to build trust again with your partners? Was it about that? Was it about the personal interaction builds that trust? Or did you feel that wasn't an issue?
I think it's more that there's a certain level of emotion that is not really, we can't really bring across via video conference call.
Yeah.
I think, you know what, when you really talk about something that's hard, that's tough, if you have to kind of go and make really difficult decisions and you know that the other side is struggling with it. I mean, some of our entrepreneurs had to retrench. Some of them for the first time in their lives. It was heartbreaking for them. Then it was tough. And to just go and guide them through this via a conference call is just difficult. It just wasn't, it didn't feel right. I would have wanted to kind of go and be there. Actually, I would have wanted to be there with them doing it. Just to kind of go and support. And I think it's, there's just certain things, you know, you have to be there. And we couldn't be there.
Sure. So, I mean, moving on now, because, I mean, we spoke earlier and you were saying the first couple of weeks, first 6 or 7 weeks of COVID was 95% of the meetings were from 8 to 10. and mainly negative. People are worried and they're lacking control and all those sorts of things. And you said things have sort of shifted a little bit more, and we've seen the markets generally going up, and there seems to be a recovery. Certainly in our business, you know, it's been different, but we're in improving states. What are you seeing for the future? What are you seeing things that organizations should be doing from now in the next sort of 3 to 6 months? Where are you seeing opportunities where organizations are getting it right? What are they doing, these teams?
So, again, it comes back to, you need to be flexible, but on the other hand, you need to focus. I think you need to really kind of go and say, okay, what is the one thing I can now go, with all the uncertainties, let me now focus on this specific market or this specific activity, because this is at least now that I can ring fence and kind of go and control, and let's just go and do this well. Let's try to kind of go and start settling things down and start getting traction again, getting this feeling of we are moving forward again in something. And then, so I think if you now kind of go and start playing catch up on 20 different fronts, you're going to go and just lose it. Because again, there is still too much uncertainty. But if you're going to go and say, okay, here I know this one I can do now. Let's go and do it right. And I think let's get everybody back into this feeling of we are moving forward. I think what is really needed. Also in conversation with clients and with everyone. I think that is really something that is quite key. I think the one thing that I'm really nervous about is this whole work from home kind of thing. I think we all learned that we can work from home, that we can get a lot of things done. I see some companies now getting into this. Maybe that is the way to kind of go and do this moving forward. And I personally feel there's now companies who are saying, well, we can get rid of offices, it's going to save us cost. Mm-hmm. And in the short term, that's fine. But I think they will lose the heart of the organization, the pulse of the organization. Company culture, to do company culture remotely, unless you are a remote-first company, you started the company, you've never, ever had physical kind of premises. I think you really kind of go and lose the pulse of your business. Job, work becomes a job. And I've kind of felt it. I mean, normally you go to work and you enjoy the talk next to the coffee machine. You enjoy all those little interactions. When everything just becomes about your activity and your, then it becomes, well, this is my task. This is what I get paid for it. Well, then if somebody else gives you a different task or pays you more, you also move on because all the glue disappears. And I think we will, the big learning at the moment is how to keep the glue. And really kind of go and make sure that in this new world, we can kind of go and move on with a different kind of scenarios. And I'm not saying everything goes back to normal because it won't. I mean, we've definitely learned a few things. But I would warn companies to kind of go and think that what it is now should be the thing for the next 2 or 3 years. I think we are at risk of losing a lot of what actually defines us. And that is the personal interaction.
Yeah, I think you could be right there. I mean, one of the things is culture is so important, and it certainly showed itself for the last 2 or 3 years before COVID. And maybe one of the reasons that some organizations got through was because of their strong culture. And so building a company without that interaction or that culture of interaction, one wonders actually what the impact of that is going to be, because it's almost an unusual, and we haven't necessarily found the rules, what works and what doesn't work right now for that. So I noticed also as an organization, you don't just invest in tech companies, because I think that's the assumption. And one of the things I've also realized is that some of the traditional tech companies are moving into legacy areas. So, for instance, you know, Yuppie Chef moving into retail. And so there is this transition. You've got Batu Shoes, who we know has done really well, but they were in tech for 2 years selling online. And now they've got, I think they've had 15 store openings, about 10 or 12 of those during COVID in South Africa. They've grown massively in terms of their shoe brand. retail, and they're doing exceptionally well. Is that something for you in the future? Are you looking at maybe, you know, like I know you've got the food drinks. Are you looking at organizations, manufacturing organizations who, and moving them into tech, or are you looking at tech companies and move them into retail? Do you look at those sort of opportunities? Traditional businesses?
I think we will still continue to focus on predominantly tech, simply because that is our sweet spot. That's what we are used to. However, tech for the sake of tech doesn't bring it. I mean, at the end, the technology is most of the time is the enabler. This is how it gets done. It is at the end about the value that you create, you know, about the customer experience that you create. I mean, I know that people will kind of go and hate me for saying this, but if I kind of go and buy a car, if I, Andrea, buy a car, I like a fast car. I like certain things. I really do not care about the technology. So it doesn't, for me, it really doesn't matter how it gets done. For me, it needs to be accelerated, it needs to do this. I mean, it has kind of a certain value it needs to create for me, and technology is just the way it kind of does it. Now, a lot of tech companies, they are, of course, very much in love with their tech, and we find that those who are more successful are the ones that really start understanding what is the value that their customers want to see. And if the value is not based on the tech, so in terms of retail, for example, if the shopping experience, the e-commerce shopping experience, can be enhanced by actually walking into a store and having the touch and feel, if this is what the customer's what makes the customer even more loyal to the brand, well, then maybe that's what you have to kind of go and do. Sure, you can be successful the other way around, but what is the value for the customer? What do they want? If it enhances the value, then sometimes you just need to go and broaden. You need to kind of go and start looking wider. And I think for particularly tech companies, it is quite often difficult to see this simply because they are so in love with their tech. They believe that tech is the value, but it's the experience that is the value. And I think the successful ones start understanding this and interpreting this and therefore widening their offerings.
Yeah, for sure. So I know that, you know, you've got three principles. It's obviously networks, investing, and then knowledge, right? And like when
knowledge,
you spoke,
funding, yes, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, wow, I was in love with that little try thing you're going on there. And it was so relevant, but also for us, what we see is networks is really obviously very important. And I'm hearing constantly that organizations say they need more networks. So they have a good product and they're looking for new networks. Is that the biggest challenge facing startups and entrepreneurs?
I'm not sure it's the biggest challenge, but it can be the one that makes the difference the quickest.
Okay.
So
in a positive way.
If you mess up with the network, it can also be a negative way. But the point is, if you want to find more clients, if you want to find more staff, if you want to kind of go and do all those kind of things, for you to kind of go and do this, you can do it the hard way. You can kind of go and do cold calling, or you can do, I mean, I'm just, there's a lot of ways to kind of go and do things. Or you have a network that you can reach out to and you get a trusted introduction, or you get a trusted referral, or you get a trusted opinion. So the point is, a good solid network just simply makes things easier. That's just the way it is. It can fast track things. It can just, it reduces quite often a risk layer. And you know what? I think that is the biggest kind of advantage that kind of comes with it. Now, when it comes to network, I think it is quite important that if you're going to go and start building it, network is not a one-way street. So you can't just kind of go and say, well, here is the network and I am benefiting from the network. Mm. The network also needs to benefit from you. So it's give and take. You need to kind of go and say, well, how do I contribute? What do I have to kind of go and add to it? You need to keep it alive. You need to nourish it. You need to kind of go and understands that a strategic network can be so super important. I mean, I honestly believe, I mean, we get most of our deals through our network. The most value add that we create is through our network. But it really, and I spend a lot of my time in my network. And a lot of times people ask me for a favor, ask me if they're going to go and do some things. And I'll do it because, not because I get an immediate benefit from it, but because that is just the way it works. I mean, you need to kind of go and really work it, and you have to be sincere about it and authentic. It also doesn't help to kind of go and say, I'm not trying to kind of go and create a network in whatever and just try to fake it. Networks is something, it is hard work, it absolutely pays if you have one, but you need to be genuine about it.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that I see is a lot of, certainly tech companies, they have a client, they have some good technology, but there seems to be almost a fear of networking or getting out there and meeting and growing. They know what they need to do. There seems to be the inability to maybe pick up the phone enough. I don't know if you're seeing that or that seems to be the area that they most need to help with, that sales and marketing side of things. Because they've built something that works.
Yes. Access to market, selling, actually going out. I mean, again, a lot of tech companies have a little bit of build it and they will come. We've got this great technology, now everybody needs to go. I mean, why is the phone not ringing? Why are they not kind of, well, who knows that you've got it? How are you communicating this? I mean, are you kind of going and out there? And quite often, again, technology entrepreneurs are a bit more introverts. It's to kind of go, so that they need to surround themselves with extroverts to kind of go, who are happy to kind of go and start singing their praises, who can go out and kind of go and tell the story. That's actually what makes a great team. So, yes, I mean, it's definitely the network that you can go and use for market access. That's absolutely key. And I think that is, of course, where in particularly kind of in South Africa, a lot of the problems come, because you simply have people who are extremely well networked, people who went to the right kind of school, who kind of went and are exposed immediately, much easier, to a network that matters than others who don't. You have to really go and build network. And again, if nobody has mentored you, if nobody has taught you about the value of networks, you just don't know about this. I mean, my children are always quite amazed when I kind of go and tell them how important a network is, and that they even already now at school, to some extent, are building their future network. And that you, for example, don't burn bridges. It is something that you really kind of go and shouldn't do. I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, if somebody, if you don't want to talk to somebody anymore, well, but this burning of bridges is something that be very, very careful about this, because you just never know. And just be genuine, never be mean, do the right kind of things. I think it's something that you have to go instill in somebody from a very, very young age, because you really would never know.
For sure. Yeah. I think it's, for some people, it's built in them to network. For other people, it's a little bit harder. And obviously what we, you know, I think you're very passionate about networking for women as well. Women are generally really good at networking, but, you know, there's not too many women the same extent in tech like you. So I know that you're a big proponent of women in tech and more networking. But
yeah, I'm actually not really sure whether women are so good at networking outside of their network. So to kind of go into other networks. I think men quite often actually have a slightly different maybe confidence to kind of go and do this. I find women are good at networking within women networks, but it's sometimes that becomes something where you need to kind of go and start get outside of your comfort zone and just go and stand your man and kind of go and do so. No, I mean, for me, it is very interesting. Coming as a foreigner into South Africa, I didn't have a network. I needed to kind of go and start building this. Right from the start, being in a very tech-heavy industry, from the start, there were a lot of... So I was the foreigner. I was the only woman. Quite often, I was the youngest. So I had to kind of go and get out of all those kind of things and somehow find find my place and find my voice and find that we're going to, how we're going to go and do this. And yes, I saw a lot of interesting things. Like, first of all, like, for example, I have to unfortunately say that other than my mother, I never had a woman helping me. It has always been men who helped me, because there were no other women who could kind of, particularly in my working environment, who could kind of go and mentor and help me. That's one of the things that I kind of said. So I want to be, I want other women to not have that problem. So I'm very happy to kind of go and help and to do. But they also need to kind of go and understand that when you want to go and compare apples to apples, then you need to kind of go and also be prepared to kind of go and do the same things. You need to kind of go and play the game the same kind of rules. I mean, there's a lot of things around being, of course, a career woman, but also, of course, being a mother and so on. And you need to kind of go and understand how to kind of go and combine all of this and do it the same way as everybody else. So it's really trying to kind of go and I like to guide. I like to kind of go and help wherever I kind of go and can, but you also need to kind of go and stop making excuses for yourself. It's the world is tough outside, and you need to kind of go and do what needs to be done.
I noticed that even in your pitch decks and some of the things you've done before, that you're, as an organization, and I get it from this conversation as well, you're very clear on what to do and then what not to do. It seems like everything that you position, it's like, so if you're going to network or drive networks, what are you going to do to add value yourself? So it's not just about what you can take. Where do you learn that from? Because it is, you know, I think so important that you don't just take the one view of things. You're almost like a great journalist. You've taken this because they say it's not always what you're doing that succeeds, but it also focuses on the things not to do is just as important as focusing on the things to do. And you seem to have made that a habit.
Well, the 10,000-hour rule applies. I mean, and the gray hair doesn't come from nothing. So, sure. If there's one thing I have learned is to trust my gut feeling. I've learned that to be successful, both parties have to win. I'm not successful because I win. And you know what? Short-term greed is the worst of it all. You need to be long-term greedy. Meaning, you need to kind of go and say, well, yes, I will get my benefit out of it, but that will come at some stage and not now and not immediate. And I need to kind of go and help and contribute now to really kind of go and do this. And it has to be a give and take. It cannot just be, I find it very interesting. For example, to go and see people who work for a great company, have a big name behind them, and start thinking because they have this name behind them, they get every meeting. And then they leave the organization and they see nobody wants to talk to them. And have to kind of realize it wasn't because of me, it was because of the title that I had behind my name. And, you know what? People do business with people. And can be fated. Sure, we can fake it up to a certain point. Is it worth faking it? Once in a while, yes, but in the long run.
You're going to have to change.
We are who we are. I want to do business with people that I at least respect, that I like, and I want them to respect me. The liking, I mean, you don't have to be everybody's best buddy, but I mean, it comes back to trust, to respect. And you know what? It needs to be genuine. And I'm also very genuine by now, who I don't like, who I don't trust. Mm. So I have refused to go and speak on panels because I don't want to sit next to on there will be certain things I will not do. I will not go and attend certain things. I will not go and do certain things because then again, I would be disingenuous if I was going to go and do this. So it is about being clear about, I think, your own principles, but then don't expect from others what you're not prepared to kind of guarantee yourself.
For sure. I mean, I know that one of your big mandates is also to look at how do you grow tech and Africa. And so there's that on the one side, there's like unearthing opportunities in Africa. Is that directly linked to scaling those opportunities internationally? Or do you think that we can start bringing more organizations into Africa? Do you think that, or should I say, what do we need to do? Because I think most people agree that there's big opportunities, but it's not necessarily being realized at the moment.
So, as a German who lives in South Africa by choice, I've always been asked, why do you do this? Why don't you go back to Germany? Why don't you go to Perth? And for me, Africa, South Africa is this place of possibility, of, you know, you can do so much. And I have had so many conversations traveling when people kind of go and discount things because they are from Africa or they're from South Africa. And there's this part of me that just wants to prove that that's so wrong. And that
the challenge.
That's a nice little challenge. That, I mean, you can actually kind of go and do this because it is a choice that I consciously make to go and stay in South Africa and actually go and prove to the world that amazing entrepreneurs can come from South Africa, can come from Africa, and can compete with everybody kind of globally. Now, are there challenges that come with this? Yes, absolutely. But I think we need the success stories and we need to kind of go and tell them because that's going to go and attract more and more people. I think the world is intrigued about Africa. But being intrigued is not enough. Now we have to deliver. We have to execute. And I think if we can do this, if we can execute, if we can kind of go and take things now to this next level, if we can kind of go and show and demonstrate about the way that we can turn around Africa in many different ways, the way that we can make this a place where people want to kind of go and live and want to embrace those opportunities. We can do so much here. We've got the talent, we've got the natural resources, we've got the space, we've got the weather, we've got so much. We just have to go and start executing and kind of, and some of them also start believing ourselves. And that's why you need success stories. And for me, that's the little thing that I want to kind of go into. I want to create success stories because success kind of inspires success. And if that's the little part that I play is to find the right entrepreneurs and make them success stories that inspire. It inspires the kids to kind of go and do the math homework and actually kind of go and say, it's worth it. We can do this. Just because I'm from Africa just means that actually I have all the opportunity and not the challenges.
So, I mean, we do see it, right? We see it with people who actually leave, maybe not their businesses, but individuals, leaders, when we see them going overseas and they do really well. But we're not seeing enough South African companies scaling overseas. Why is that, do you think? Is it because it's tough? Any environment is completely different. Is it that? Is it because of the lack of investment to scale in those areas? Is it because those networks are already functioning and they're trying to stop our success internationally? Like the old boys club? What do you think needs to happen for us to improve the success rate?
It's a combination of all of the above. I mean, I remember the first time I went to Silicon Valley and I attended a pitching kind of session. There were 10 companies, and out of the 10 companies, 9 didn't mention a market outside of California. And I kind of started laughing, and when they asked me about my opinion, I said, well, if they would have been in South Africa and they would have told me they're not thinking about a market outside of the Western Cape, I would have thrown them out of the room, kind of saying, not yet. So I think the point is that if we really want to kind of go and scale the South African market, it's most likely too small, and we have to go, whether we scale into the rest of Africa, whether we scale into wherever. So for our entrepreneurs to be successful, they need to get out of their comfort zone. And it becomes an interesting thing because once you are successful in South Africa, you have a business that can allow you a great lifestyle. And come on, Cape Town is fantastic. South Africa, I mean, you know what? Do you really want to kind of go and do the hard thing? So that's, first of all, it's a big decision to kind of go and do that. And second of all, if you want to, you need to get into foreign markets. You need money for this. And for this, you need hard currency. You need like dollars. You need real amounts. Now, if you think about The average size fund in South Africa cannot go and give you this. So you need to actually go and start raising real proper $5 million, $10 million. And they are not $20 million, $30 million, because your counterparts internationally have done this. Now, again, this is difficult from South Africa. And we have now a few that actually are managing to do this. And you can see those companies. They are international. They are now starting to kind of go and build them up. But they needed to go and find a lot of the money overseas, which is not easy. Where if you are overseas, I think for a South African company to go and do it is so much harder. But those who are able to do it, they just have this fighting spirit. You know, because they have to fight for it, they value it more. And they have the right kind of attitude to kind of go and do this. And that's why I think South African companies and South African entrepreneurs are also so highly respected all over the world. Because it wasn't easy. And if you can achieve it, if you can do it, well, then you know what, then you have the right ingredients to be a super successful entrepreneur.
I mean, I know that you get a lot of requests for funding and finance, and you're very particular about who you partner with. And we know that this is not a, you know, 100% success rate always, but also some of the people that you didn't invest in. Is there anyone that sort of surprised you that you didn't invest in but came through?
Sure. That's always the one who got away. Absolutely. I must say there are some that got away, didn't invest, but quite often there was a certain reason why we couldn't. And we'd have thought, and it's more like I kind of knew that they would be successful. The pity that we couldn't do the deal at that point of time, but I kind of knew it. The ones that really surprised, where I would have thought they would fail and didn't, actually I can't come up. I need to think about this. No. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, we can't invest in everybody, and there's definitely some companies where in hindsight I kind of think, damn, I would love to kind of go and be in there. But as long as they're successful, I mean, every successful story counts. So if we are part of it or not, it's not that critical. I think there's so many untold stories. I think that's also an interesting thing. I mean, not everything that just goes into the broader kind of media is good. There are so many, amazing stories and amazing entrepreneurs who are really doing things and making their mark and building those companies that we all aspire to kind of be a part of and want to kind of go and be associated with.
What do you look for in those entrepreneurs? So the ones that you do invest in, the ones that you could have, but you know, that lights you up, for the ones that you would maybe jump ship and join. What is it about? Is it the way they tell a story? Is it the way they inspire people within them? It can't just be that.
It's something different for each one of them, but of course they need to have a passion. So they need to have a certain subject matter expertise. They need to have a passion for what they're doing. They need to be coachable. And I remember, so once upon a time there was a company, they were a Cape Town company, they were ahead of their market. They were in something, they were like, everybody could see when they did the pitch, everybody's like, this is the next big thing. You can absolutely see this. But the entrepreneur was absolutely not coachable. And the moment you would question one of the things, he would become aggressive. And it's quite interesting. He went to every investor in our network and everybody rejected the company. And everybody said, I would love to be able to invest in this company. They just would have to go and take the entrepreneur out and put somebody else in. Because they are so onto something, but I will never ever be able to work with this entrepreneur. And the company never raised funding and the company doesn't exist anymore. And it's really one of those where I like to say they were so 100% onto something that could have been fantastic and big. And it's just, so there's a side of I will not go and deal with that entrepreneur. Last year, I traveled with one of our entrepreneurs 33 days across the world to raise funding. To travel with someone 33 days around the world, now not in one go, but across. You know what? I have to ask myself, do I want to spend that much time with you? Is it worth my time? Forget about the company. Do I want to spend that much time with you?
Mm.
If I can answer that question with yes, then that's good.
They've done well to inspire you. Because you're investing your time as well. I suppose you're going to be happy as well. It's not just about that. It can't just be about the money. Because you can make money in lots of ways.
If I have to sit next to you on a plane for 18 hours and I hate spending time, I don't know what to talk about. Really? No.
No. So they have to have a certain amount of charisma, honesty, and integrity.
Integrity.
And I mean,
integrity is a key part. Integrity.
And do you see Cape Town still driving growth for startups and tech in Africa? Do you still see it as the main place because of all the things you mentioned earlier? Or are you seeing other places sort of coming through and disrupting that status quo?
I mean, Johannesburg is catching up. And then, of course, sure, across Africa, there are definitely different hubs. There's a lot happening. But each country has got their own little flavor. What they're really kind of going, what they're focused on, what they're very, very good at, and so on. So I don't think that there is the one hub in Africa. I mean, Cape Town is not the one hub, definitely not. Cape Town is the one for a certain kind of company, and there is others who are more the Johannesburg. I think to some extent where you are defines you a little bit. So I wish I could say that Cape Town was the only one. It is definitely one of the key hubs in Africa. But there are absolutely others as well.
I mean, is it that thinking that we need to create like a Silicon Valley with Silicon Cape to where you have that focal point where you have, because we've got, with Cape Town, you've got universities, you've got the lifestyle, so you've got so many things going for us.
You definitely need the ecosystem. It cannot happen in isolation. And you see very clearly that those hubs have this. They have their own universities. They have enough corporates. They have enough entrepreneurs. They build the kind of ecosystem around it. It is quite important, for example, that you can travel. There is an airport that gets connected to all over the world without having to kind of go and do too many stops. There's a lot of things that need to kind of go and come together. So you definitely can't do it, but you struggle to do it in isolation. And if you want to scale an ecosystem, if you want to become a hub, the ecosystem in total has to come. You need to have some investors. You need to have access to funds. It all needs to be there.
How do we get more investors like Knife Capital into Cape Town and South Africa?
By, first of all, having more success stories, but more of all by the financial institutions, the pension funds, the government funds, but them understanding that, looking at the example of Israel years and years ago, we need more funds and we need larger funds. Mm. If the average fund size is 200 million rand, and you normally have a limit that you can only invest 20% of your fund into one kind of company, then you can calculate how much you can only go and give the company. Companies want to kind of go and compete globally. We need larger funds. We need more funds. And unfortunately, venture capital as an asset class is still very much dependent on high net worth individuals. It's the typical institutions that all over the world are funding venture capital. In South Africa, they're not. And I think what we need is other government needs to kind of go and say, well, every pension fund has to allocate whatever, 2% of their assets into venture capital or whatever. So either it needs to be forced or they need to kind of go and start understanding the power of venture capital as an asset class. And if we have more funds and larger funds, I think it doesn't help us to have 100 more small funds. We need some funds with real substance that can pay, that can write the $20 million check. No VC fund in South Africa can do this. Whereas the competitors of our companies are raising 20, 30, 40, $50 million. There is not one VC fund in South Africa who can write a check like this. So we are not giving our entrepreneurs the right side of wings to go and fly.
So there needs to be, I mean, that was a thing that I heard. There needs to be more money investing in VCs, private equity, those sorts of things. Because without that, it's almost like the triangle. If the base is wide, the big amounts need to be bigger, really, for the base to be wider. It was great speaking to you. I'm sorry I was a bit late. It was amazing to speak to you, and I certainly got a lot from this. And I hope everybody else did as well. So thank you so much for your time, and we hope to see you. I don't know if they invited you to speak at Africa Tech Week, the team. I think it's the 27th of November.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks so much.